Greetings, everyone, and welcome to a rather unique RVW Wealth Wisdom podcast. Today, we're dealing with a different aspect of wisdom. We're actually dealing with something quite dear and near and dear to all of our hearts, and that is single malt Scotch whiskey. And, of course, when one talks about fine single malt Scotch whiskey, the name that always rises to the top is the gold standard of single malt whiskey, and that is none other than Macallan's. And so we're particularly delighted today to welcome to our studio James Bowers, the National Brand Ambassador for Macallan. James, it's a great pleasure to have you with us. We're all fascinated by Macallan's, by what's going on in the Scotch industry. And I wonder if you could start off by just introducing yourself, telling us a little bit about what makes Macallan's unique, and then perhaps a little overview of what's going on in the marketplace, the single malt versus blends. And then maybe later on in the podcast, we can look at some other non-Scotch whiskies as well.
Absolutely. That's a very tall order to in one go, but I'll do my best to acquiesce to that. So yeah, my name is James Bowers. I'm the National Ambassador for the Macallan Single Malt Scotch. So really, when we're talking about what makes the Macallan unique and what separates the Macallan from not only Scotch as a category, because you're talking about a few different categories within that category, but within the single malt Scotch category, is a couple of things. I always like to start off whenever I'm talking to an audience, and I tell them that everything at the Macallan takes just a little bit more time. But one of my favorite quotes is by a very smart guy. I think you might know who he is. His name was Albert Einstein. And he said, if you don't have the time to do it right, when are you going to have the time to do it again? Right. And I think that's very important. So everything at the Macallan takes a little bit more time. Forget the fact that it takes between 75 and 100 years for a oak tree to mature, for you able to sustainably harvest it, to turn it into staves, to turn it into casks. From that point, you have these oak casks, that have been cut from this tree. You need to get the water. You have to extract the water from those staves. A lot of companies will just throw those staves into a kiln to dry them out, to take that water out, to turn those staves into casks. We prefer not to do that. We prefer to let our staves dry in the sun, is what we call season in the sun. This process takes 2 to 3 years. So as we all know in this room, that time is money. So those 2 to 3 years is really a lot of money and a lot of time spent to make sure that we have the properly seasoned oak staves to put into our casks. From that point, once those casks are crafted, they are sent to a sherry bodega in Spain, where they are seasoned with dry Oloroso sherry for an additional 2 to 3 years. Again, we don't have to do that, but we at the Macallan aren't here to make the most whiskey. We're here to make the best whiskey. And so, you know, a lot of companies will purchase sherry seasoned barrels. And in fact, a lot of them will purchase them from us because we actually own roughly about 85% of all sherry casks that are used in Scotch whiskey aging. But all of these things take time, is what I'm really kind of getting down to. And so once those casks have been sent back to Scotland, that's when they finally meet our new make spirit. But that's not really where it ends, and it's not really actually where it starts. It starts with the spirit itself, right? And so at the Macallan, we actually utilize some of the smallest copper pot stills in the industry. Again, because we are not here to make the most Scotch. We are here to make the best Scotch. Those smaller copper pot stills, for us, we feel has maximum interaction with our new make spirit and the copper, giving it a different mouthfeel, a supreme mouthfeel, something that you all can taste when you're actually tasting Macallan. From that point, when you are distilling a spirit, you have the master distiller who is, he's separating what we call the heads, the hearts, and the tails. The heads and the tails are full of these fusel oils and ester oils that really contain a lot of flavors and scents that we don't like, rotting egg or anything like that. So those are separated, and what we take is the heart, and the heart has all of that flavor, but it has the part of ethanol that doesn't make us go blind, right? And so, which is important, absolutely. And so different companies will take different percentages of that heart, right? And the further out of the heart you're getting, the more closer you're getting to those heads and those tails, which have more of those fusel and ester oils that we don't like. We at the Macallan actually take one of the smallest cuts of the heart in the Scotch whiskey industry at about 16 to 18%, give or take. Again, we are doing that because we want to make the best whiskey, not the most whiskey. And so all of these factors put in together, the time that it takes to craft these casks, to season these casks with dry oloroso sherry, to then age this new make spirit that took so long to produce, and what we really take the smallest kind of best aspect of to put into those casks, that all in and of itself, in a nutshell, I suppose, is what makes the Macallan special. And what makes our consumers willing to go to extreme lengths to collect Macallan, to spend record amounts of money at auction. Just as of recent, a bottle sold for well over $1.5 million in U.S. You know, people don't do this for products that don't have a rich history and a supreme quality in craft, right? That just doesn't happen. You do this with art. You do this with those extreme collectibles, and Macallan can definitely be considered one of those.
Just a question on the quality of Macallan. I've noticed lately that the production of Macallan includes a large number of bottles that don't have aging. And I see that as a trend, not only with Macallan, but a lot of others. Is that all about the shortage of great whiskey? Are you trying to perhaps phony it up with some younger stuff that you don't want to confess the age? You know, you want some kind of underage kids walking around in bottles of Macallan. I mean,
what was the term you used? Phony it up?
Phony it up.
Phony it up.
You know, you don't want to phony it up with some, you know, underage whiskey pretending to be aged. So on a serious note, what is the trend about? You're part of it. It's a mega trend in the Scotch business.
Well, I think first off, there's a large misconception in the Scotch whiskey industry that just because something has an age statement, or just because something is older, means that that must be a better spirit. I can tell you from firsthand experience, I've tasted casks not only in Scotch whiskey casks, but also bourbon casks, which we were just talking about before. And I've tasted spirits that were much younger that tasted supremely better than some of these older spirits. That really, when you're talking about the cost associated and the collectability and the quality of really aged spirits, is a little bit more in how finite that spirit is, how much time it took and the resources it took to age that spirit for that amount of time. It's really, for really Scotch whiskey as a whole, is not a testament to that this is going to be a better tasting or a better quality spirit than what you're getting in a different, even younger Scotch. So really what you're talking about with non-age statement whiskeys, and yes, it is a definite trend in the Scotch whiskey industry, is really outlining that fact that age does not necessarily mean that it's better quality. There is a beauty, there's an art to our master of whiskey really taking many different years of Scotch whiskey casks and really blending them together to create a supremely quality, beautiful, and delicious spirit. Yes, absolutely, the really influx of demand on Scotch whiskey industry as a whole has really had a huge impact on every company, and 100% these companies definitely have to pivot in ways in order to really still produce quality Scotch, and we at the Macallan are no different. But in the end, our love of quality and our dedication to quality still persists throughout.
Thank you. Terrific. Let me take a moment just to introduce the people sitting around the conference room over here in our studio. Right next to me, Stefan So, senior member of our team, head of research, senior vice president. And across the table is Jeff Abrams, also senior vice president and managing director of the RVW Legacy Enhancement and Transmission Program. And it's a great pleasure to have both of you with me. And Jeff, why don't you kick off with a question of your own?
Thank you, Sal, and I appreciate it very much. So, James, in my role with RVW, we focus on legacy, on the parts of wealth you can't measure with our families. So a question about Macallan. You mentioned its rich history. Can you share a little bit with us about what the founding history was and really what that legacy is today for the Macallan.
Yeah, absolutely. Really, I always like to first throw out that the first written record of Scotch as in just the first written record of Scotch in general wasn't until 1495, roughly. But that record showed such a wealth of Scotch making that it shows that people had been consuming single malt Scotch and Scotch for a very long time prior to that. Macallan's history begins in 1824. It's by a man named Alexander Reed. Alexander Reed really took ownership of this house, which we call the Easter Elkies House, which is our ancestral home, our spiritual home, and it's actually where we still operate today as the Macallan. And at that point, he was making Scotch, and really that whole area at that time was booming in the Scotch, in single malt Scotch industry. A lot of that being because there was a tax that was levied against all distilleries. And so if you were closer to the government, it was a little easier for the government to tax you. And so a lot of these Scotch companies or distilleries at that time would travel up into Speyside, which is why Speyside really has kind of the highest concentration of Scotch distilleries to date, which is understandable, right? And so, the Macallan really began in that time, even though our history, I'm sure, goes back a lot farther than that. And we have always really had that dedication to quality. And what we've been known for throughout history is our sherry seasoned casks and really what that gives to the Scotch flavor profile and the depth of flavor to the spirit. And so that's really what we're known for and what we've always been known for.
And James, when I had the pleasure of meeting you at the Macallan Manor, that was a very, very interesting experience. What does it take to put on an experience like that where there was the woods and also followed by where they distill and all of that experience?
Yeah, absolutely. Well, thank you for coming again. It was an enormous undertaking by us because this spanned 9 different cities. And so it had to be an activation that was enough to wow everybody, but then also mobile, something that you could take and ship to Chicago or ship to New York or so on and so forth. So it was a really large undertaking by both Edrington as a company, Macallan, and the production companies that we worked with to help us put on that event. You know, a lot of these actors, they traveled throughout all of the 9 cities. I'm talking about which you saw.
Amazing, by the way.
Yes, absolutely. And then just really all of these things, having the ability to travel was really, really daunting. And so it was, it's something we're going to repeat, something we're excited about. But yes, definitely not an easy undertaking.
Wanted to just get into the area of aging and just talk briefly about some of the other aspects of aging. There are several whiskey producers who've really almost never done aging. You look at really premium whiskeys like Johnny Walker Blue Label, which by most objective standards are pretty good whiskey. There's no aging on that at all. Johnny Walker Black. So in other words, other than the Johnny Walker Green, which is a stated 15-year aged Scotch whiskey, can you explain why some people have just stayed away from aging entirely, or is that just simply an extension of the point you made earlier of the perils of aging?
No, with Johnny Walker specifically, Johnny Walker is a blended Scotch, and with blended Scotch, which, mind you, I'm not saying anything negative about blended Scotch. It accounts for about 90% of all Scotch whiskey production and consumption worldwide, and Johnny Walker is a huge aspect of that. But when you're blending Scotch, there absolutely is aging on that Scotch. I think what you're referring to is there's not an age statement on the bottle.
Right.
So with blended Scotch whiskey, what you're doing is these houses, such as Johnny Walker, they are buying single malt Scotches as well as other later grain Scotches or whiskeys, I'm sorry, and they're blending those into those barrels. But those single malts that they are buying definitely have some age to them. It's a different way of producing Scotch. So they are really, buying these ages from other warehouses or other whiskey makers.
Right. Can we get into, first of all, non-Scotch whiskeys?
Sure.
Other than bourbon, which I'd like to keep for the end. Japan turns out a huge number of whiskeys. India has some very fine whiskeys now as well. I see Israel now has two or three whiskey distilleries, which is quite surprising. And, of course, there's Ireland, where maybe, according to many, the whole story of whiskey really began. Can we have a little survey of what's going on around the world in terms of whiskey production?
Yeah, absolutely. I mean, yeah, to your statement, I mean, the word whiskey comes from the Gaelic uskiba, which means water of life. So Gaelic and derived from Scotland and Ireland. Absolutely. It started in Ireland and then moved up, moved over to Scotland. So 100%, that is the heart and the kind of the epicenter of where whiskey began. Globally, you see this huge influx of whiskey. The funny thing is a lot of these countries have been making whiskey for a long time. Japan has been making whiskey for a long time, but they really just kind of got a bit of attention in the last few years. And really, it's because they're making amazingly beautiful, delicate whiskeys. I love Japanese whiskey, and to their credit, those whiskey distillers have done an amazing job, not only in the whiskey itself, which is obviously ultimately the most important thing, but in the branding and the styling and the craftsmanship of their bottles. It's just gorgeous. And then you see this reflected all across globally. You see these other distillers in other countries that are starting to get into that category because whiskey is a growing category. And so it makes sense to want to get into that. And really, it's a category that not everyone can just dive into because you need to have the ability to age a product. And that costs money. It takes time. And so not everybody can do that. It's a lot harder to start a whiskey company than it is to start a vodka company, for example. And so, these people's credit, they are producing some amazing whiskeys, and I want to see that continue to grow.
So when I was learning about whiskey, I learned that Scotch is without the E. Other whiskeys is with the E generally. So how did that come about?
So the funny thing, the rule of thumb really is if the country has an E in it, then the whiskey has an E in it as well. But yeah, that really is just derived from the differences in language as far as between Gaelic, Irish and Gaelic Scottish, and really just the translation of that really is how it started. There's different names for it throughout history, really.
Let's move on to bourbon, which is really a rapidly growing segment of the whiskey business. What do you see as the trends in bourbon? How do you account for its growth compared with Scotch? What are the statistics roughly of Scotch versus bourbon consumption or whiskey generally versus bourbon? To what extent is bourbon really the growth center that seems to be coming through in the media and the reports?
So in the United States, bourbon and, well, just whiskey as a whole definitely accounts for a large amount of the growth sector. I mean, you can't deny what, say, Jack Daniel's as a Tennessee whiskey's influence is on the American whiskey market. We, as a company, Edrington, just actually purchased Wyoming whiskey out of Rigby, Wyoming. And that's a testament to the fact that American whiskey, not just bourbon, but American whiskey really has its own unique draw and demand. And not only is that demand really strong at home, but you see that demand really strong in Japan. Countries such as Japan, South Korea, China, you see this demand for American whiskey and bourbon really has been exploding for the last, I'd say, two decades, really. And so, American whiskey definitely accounts for a huge amount of the kind of the whiskey boom that has happened in the last few decades.
Terrific. Well, it's been really terrific to have you with us. Thank you so much.
Thank you so much.
I'm sure that our listeners are going to love the education. And as we end one year and begin another one, let me just say a good cheer to everybody. And I would suggest that a good way to bring in the new year and every new year is with a nice dram of fine single malt Scotch whiskey. Cheers.
Absolutely.
Thank you.
Cheers.
Cheers.
This podcast is not intended to constitute investment, legal, or tax advice. The ideas and strategies expressed in this podcast are not necessarily those recommended or implemented by RVW Wealth. Please consult and rely exclusively on your professional advisors.